welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 178. The first episode we're actually recording in the new year. And we got the whole crew back. Everybody's back from vacation and work and, you know, all that. So, James, Greg, Lindy, they're all here. They want to talk to you about games. They want to answer your questions. And actually, I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the second segment. We're going to do our predictions for 2010. And they might get a little wacky.
The 2010, everyone here is wrong predictions.
We haven't actually done our awards for 2009. James maybe can give us an update on the process for that. But
like right now?
There's a process?
Yeah, this went well last time we did it when I had to edit out half an episode.
I forgot about that.
Well, John's here too, so he can provide
oversight.
Yes, that would be nice if you did that, John.
Our fourth or fifth voting mechanism.
Got the punch ballots now, right? Butterfly ballot, they work very nicely.
Yeah, I'm just poking at you guys, but it's a very, very difficult thing. And, you know, I guess we can take this tangent real quick, but Game of the Year awards are very tough to do. And keep in mind that most of the Game of the Year awards that you see around the internet at various well-known websites are in discussion among maybe four or five people.
Who work together in the same building.
Right. They get together and they get in a meeting and they all bitch and moan about how we go in these 3-hour meetings and, you know, we kind of hash it all out. In fact, Giant Bomb actually put theirs on audio, which is fascinating, really. And I think a good example of why you should not do it, like why you should not even do Game of the Year awards, because they got down to their final two the overall the Game of the Year for Giant Bomb. And it came down to Uncharted 2 and Batman Arkham Asylum. And they were so evenly matched in the minds of the four guys discussing it that they ended up just kind of spending an hour trashing both games, like picking them apart and looking at, well, this one does have this flaw that the other one doesn't have. Yeah, but, they just ended up sounding really critical and negative about two games that were clearly their two favorite games of the year. So it just, to me, just proves why you should not even try at that level. But it's much more difficult for us because we have a much larger group of people who want to have their voices heard, and we can't just get in a room and deal with it. It has to be this drawn-out process. We have to have some kind of voting mechanism and a nomination process, and then the writing of the feature is very complex and tedious as well.
Well, I mean, also the fact that not everybody has played all of the games that we're voting on, right?
Right. Well, I think it goes so far as to say that nobody has actually played all of the games.
No. Right. But if you work in a centralized location, you can kind of swap games.
Information sharing, game sharing.
And a lot of times what happens is in a small office, the people, even if you don't play a particular game, you at least saw one of the other guys play it.
Right.
So at least you've been more exposed to it. Whereas in our case, a lot of us have never even met each other, so that's not...
Yeah, happening. I mean...
Anyway, it just ends up being a hell of an ordeal, and I'm glad I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, a great example of this is I nominated Cop the Recruit for graphics because it has an amazing graphics engine. It's a shitty game, but it has a great graphics engine.
Sure, it should be eligible.
And if we were in an office setting, I could have gone around and said, look at this fucking game. Look at it.
Mm-hmm. You would have done that anyway.
It looks amazing.
It didn't have good graphics. He's rubbed it and everyone's like, look at what I'm reviewing.
It
would have been, look at this fucking game.
Don't play it. It's a great game. Just take my word for it. But just look at it. Look how fucking great it is.
Okay, well, speaking of James, he's going to kick off new business.
Yes. So I've been gone. It feels like a while. But I've been gone for 2 weeks now.
It does feel like a long time.
It does. It feels like it's been at least a month.
I explained it to my friend. It feels like my head is swelling up with all these opinions and facts and like bullshit about video games, and there's no outlet for it because I'm not doing the podcast this week.
It would be very weird if I didn't do the podcast now, I think.
Yeah.
All the shit I have to spew on all our listeners. But I'm going to go through the touch points quickly. So I got a real HD TV over the holidays. So something that's actually like a full size instead of the monitor I've been using. So it's much larger. I replayed some games on there. I finished off the super awesome Innocent Aces. So the review for that's coming on the 10th because it's embargoed until then. I will say that the game did not get a 10, but it's the first categorical 10 I've ever given out. So awesome.
Wait, what?
A category got Tet.
Yes, it's the first time we've ever done that.
We'll have to wait for the review to find out which one. Suspense.
Although it shouldn't be hard, because I've already said in the podcast that I enjoy
one. Yeah, I think I can guess.
Yeah. And then I started another review game, which is Avatar, and the review for that should be coming out soon.
For Wii?
Yes. Okay. Holy Christ.
It'll be coming soon out of his ass because he shits all over it.
It's already written. It's pending editing, and oh my God. Oh my God. It's just broken. I mean, it looks lovely. It's graphically, it's a great game, but it's Star Fox Adventures with motion controls that don't work.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it is. It's a Zelda clone with no dungeons, just like Star Fox Adventures, with linear levels that you traipse through and try to sneak up on and kill enemies and collect shit. And it's Star Fox Adventures. It really is. But the problem is that it tries to copy the Twilight Princess controls. So you swing the remote to get your staff to attack. But there's this very noticeable control lag that kills you.
Doesn't Motion Plus help at all?
No! I can't discern a difference.
Yeah, that's what I've read. I mean, it supports Motion Plus. It's weird. There have actually been 3 or 4 third-party games that came out late in 2009 that optionally supported Motion Plus, but it seems like they didn't do much with it, you know?
Yeah, when you start the game, you have the choice of using Motion Plus and or using the balance board. I don't have a balance board, so I can't determine how it uses it, but I can find no point in the game where using the balance board makes any fucking sense. So I'm just going to assume that it's in there just to drive me insane.
I think you should recuse yourself from this review, James. You can't appreciate the full depth.
Look, there is literally no place in the game where I can look at it and say, oh, the balance board could conceivably be used here.
Well, maybe it's like a special extra mode.
I don't know. But the Motion Plus controls do nothing to help the combat. And so what happens is you attack, and then there's like a full second and a half delay before you can swing your staff again. And in that time, your enemy can get up and fill you with machine gun bullets. So it really sucks. But the game keeps extolling me that if I could chain these swings together, I can do combos. But the only time I ever successfully did a combo was scratching my fucking head.
Oh, the magic of Wii, when you can accidentally do combos.
That's it. It's the only way I've ever done it. And it just blew my mind. So instead, I spend the whole time using the bow and arrow system, which is stupid in ways that I don't need to go into, except for the fact that aiming doesn't actually relate to you hitting the target. It's holding your cursor over the target for a pre-described amount of time and then releasing. So even if you go right on, you still miss because you don't wait.
So they don't even copy like the Twilight Princess bow and arrow stuff?
No, it's this stupid minigame, basically. Ugh. And the cameras are broken. I mean, just broken. Like, cameras in places you don't want it to be, in front of you, sideways.
I think it was broken in the movie, too, because everything was, like, real blurry.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
Hey-o.
It's bad. But the worst part is, I mean, the movie's pretty ham-fisted with its message.
Yeah.
Ham-fisted? James Cameron? No.
But no. But the game is 1,000 times worse. I mean, like...
Not surprising.
Like, I have never seen just such awful delivery of message ever. But it can be summarized in the dialogue, which oftentimes comes up when you're fighting enemies and they're yelling at you. Although they have a tendency to give up the search for you after about 3 seconds.
So this is primarily a stealth game?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be because the melee combat's so fucked up. But basically, they'll scream things that you like, and this is exactly how they say it. We're going to destroy everything!
Oh, good lord. Oh.
And when we finish with your planet, there'll be nothing left!
As people are wont to do.
Right. It's survival of the fittest!
Now, James, at this point, a lot of people have seen the movie, so maybe you could explain briefly, for what it's worth, the place that the game has in the story and how it relates to what happens in the movie.
It's a side story. You're not playing a character from the movie. You're playing a Navi who's just lost his shit and decides he's going to go make airplanes crash, basically. And that's it. I mean, and you walk around human camps and make them explode. That's the story.
That's really sad. I mean, I've seen the movie now, and whatever else you want to say about it, you look at it and you think, this seems like exactly the kind of movie that you could make a really cool video game out of. And also, you think, well, the story here is simple enough that they should be able to translate it even to the video game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there are they chose, and if you remember the super awesome E3 presser we got on this, they chose to make a side story out of it. Yeah. And you don't play as an avatar, although there are two in the game.
You're playing as a real Na'vi.
Yes.
Okay.
There are some you interact with through the course of the game, but I mean, there in the entire course of the game, there is literally one single human who is not a complete asshole in the whole game. But you'll kill like hundreds of them.
It's sad that this didn't turn out better, because at one point, I think there was some kind of communal sense that the Avatar video game might be pretty good.
Yeah.
Because of Cameron's direct involvement, the fact that it's being done by Ubisoft, who have actually a pretty good track record with movie-based games, and I think actually that the people, or at least the generally speaking, the team who made the Avatar video game are the same team who made the King Kong video game, which was well-regarded when it came out, you know, a few years ago.
In reality, they've made games like this before. I mean, Beyond Good and Evil isn't really that different from what they're trying to do here, except it's not awful.
Right.
I mean, I say awful, but the game...
It just makes you wonder what went wrong here, because certainly I can't imagine Avatar the video game was all that rushed. I mean, the movie was in development for so long that they should have had plenty of time to plan ahead, and I'm sure James Cameron, even 10 years ago, knew there would be a video game of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the problem is if there's something goes wrong or things don't go as expected, there's, you know, it's such a hard constraint, you can't push it back.
Yes.
You know, with certain games, they get pushed back and they get better.
But at the same time,
should it need to be pushed back? Maybe not.
I feel like the game should have almost already been in the can.
And the other thing is there is so much post-production on the Avatar movie. In fact, the movie is almost entirely
post-production.
pretty much.
That they should have known years ago what the story would be. I mean, I can't imagine that much editing went on late in the process. I mean, it's almost 3 fucking hours long.
Yeah.
So Cameron should have had a pretty fucking clear idea of what's going into the final cut of the movie a long time ago. So, like, I don't even buy the typical, justification of, well, things kept changing on us, it's really complicated to work in parallel with movie development, because this is the one exception where I would think they should have very, very thorough advanced knowledge of what is going to be in the movie.
Now, my personal favorite element of the game is there's these flying missions where you're on the back of one of the wraiths and you're shooting at fucking helicopters with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
and
do they bleed? Does the helicopter bleed?
No, it doesn't bleed.
That's too bad. It's because it's rated T.
Yeah, exactly. There are some timed event things you have to do with the Wii remote that sometimes it recognizes correctly to make the helicopter crash. But, I was thinking, okay, this is where they intended to use Wii Motion Plus if you have it in there. But they don't. They use the nunchuck to control your position on the screen. Because you have to use the Wii remote for the pointer.
Right,
it's like, my God, why is the nunchuck even, or the Wii Motion Plus even being used?
It's to put a thing on the box.
Yeah, like I said, there's an option to use the balance board, but damn well if I can't figure out where the hell I use it.
Well, James, I was promised some kind of dramatic reenactment.
I just gave it to you. That was the super awesome dialogue of "We're going to destroy everything."
okay.
That was pretty awesome.
That is how it's delivered. I mean,
I bought it.
And they use that phrase. Oh, look, the first time I heard it, I was in the room with somebody because it's the holidays, and they just started laughing, like they're just howling back there. I turn around and go, "I don't know. I just don't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have to watch this." And like, no, it's good. Keep going. I love this.
That's terrible.
I remember at one point reviewing the Wii version of Transformers in front of my family at the beach.
Okay.
Oh, good Lord.
We had taken the Wii to the beach, and I had to review that game. I was on a deadline, and so I said, hey, anybody want to see this Transformers game? I don't play it now, so you're going to watch me play it.
That cost you probably a good hour of World's Funniest Animals 5.
I know.
That's tough.
James, move us on, please.
Yes. So, for some reason, during the holidays, I bought this game called Evil Geniuses off of Steam. I mean, it was on sale, and I guess the thought process was, I'll let it sit for a while I finish off all this other stuff, and I'll come back to it and play it when I have some downtime. And for whatever reason, that didn't happen, and I just started playing it during the... I guess it was during the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl, because... when I think Fiesta, I think Tostitos. And I decided that I was just going to go ahead and play that while I reveled in having HDTV showing me football. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with this game. Anybody?
No.
It came out,
nope.
Came out like 3 or 4 years ago. It's kind of like The Sims for evil masterminds. Basically, you build your base into a wall, or into a mountain, excuse me. And you know, you fill it with different kinds of rooms, like armories and alert rooms and panic rooms and things for your minions to habitate.
So you're the bad guy.
Yes, you are the evil villain.
Isn't this just Dungeon Keeper, or isn't there...
No, well, because there is a certain amount of base defense you have to do. You know, build traps, recruit guards, and deal with investigators from the world powers.
So is the game's antagonist Hans Blix? What's the...
You spend a lot of time dispatching your minions to go either steal money from different places in the world where they're currently dispatched, or to engage in nefarious missions like kidnappings and thefts. Just cause. Because you're not an evil genius unless you're stealing spacesuit technology from a NASA facility. And...
it's the evil part kind of comes with the territory.
That's what I do.
Yeah, so I... yeah, I stole...
So this is... It's like a Lex Luthor simulator, right?
Basically, yeah. And as you build your base and become more nefarious, you start to run into more investigators on your desert island that kind of come snooping around. It's kind of an amusing game, but it's so goddamn slow. I mean, because things click off every 60 seconds, so you get money every 60 seconds from the people you have assigned to be stealing it. You recruit new recruits every 60 seconds, assuming you're in the process of doing that. So there's just a lot of time where you're just waiting. You're kind of biding your time to go on your next little mission.
Sounds like a PC game.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, it's an interesting diversion when you're watching the really super awesome, boring Tostita Fiesta Bowl. But it's not a game I would sit there and play as my primary game.
Fiesta Bowl was not boring. Let's hear about Crystal Bears.
I thought it was pretty boring. But, all right, Crystal Bears, which is... Game 4 I'm talking about now? Oh, God. Crystal Bears is still a game that escapes me, to be honest. I started playing it yesterday. I logged a lot of time today since I'm not working this week. And I have no fucking clue what's going on in that game. I mean, I understand the story, but I just don't understand the game. I mean, really, the game comes down to you go from place to place and there are activities. It's not an RPG, clearly. There's, like, you know, little mini games you can do, like you can ride chocobos around, or you can play beach battle, which, for those uninitiated, John is apparently, because he's apparently a big Dead or Alive extreme volleyball fan.
Of course.
Is the butt bumping game from Dead or Alive that you influence with your power of gravity to make sure your friend wins. I mean, this game is just so off the reservation that I can't quite understand how it came into being. I mean, it's not that I'm upset playing it. I mean, I'm having a decent time, but I don't know what the fuck this game is.
It does sound, you know, perhaps for good fundamental reasons, a bit like the disaster situation. You know, both games that were in development for a very long time, they got delayed lots of times, and they're kind of weird hodgepodge of different elements.
Yeah,
and
at some point
they called time and said, we've got to put something out.
I think the words I used when I wrote my impressions at E3 were, I don't know what I'm doing. And that's the same kind of feeling I have here. Like, I'm kind of confined to thinking about games categorically. You know, this is a game where I have to employ strategic thinking. This is a game where I have to go grind the shit out of my characters to win this. This is a game where I throw rocks at monsters and then go ride a chocobo to a place where I can watch girls bounce it off each other with their butts. What bucket do I put that in?
I mean, is it a lot of it just kind of filler stuff between cutscenes? Is it just, you know, trying to move the story along? I mean, is the narrative, I know it's not an RPG, but is the narrative still the focus of the experience?
There is a very heavy narrative. There's a lot of, you know, you go somewhere, you watch the cinematic sequence, maybe you do something, and then you're told, go to place B, and then go do whatever is there to do. And a lot of the combat comes from the fact that in the areas, there's campaigns, I guess is the term they use for them, where you have to clear out all the enemies and then deactivate this miasma stream, which if you're familiar with the Crystal Chronicles...
I've heard that word before in the context of Crystal Chronicles.
Yeah, it's the dark matter that causes the monsters to appear. So it's timed, though. So if you stay in an area too long and take too long to wipe them out, the miasma goes away and it's happy fun times back in that area and you have to wait for it to come back. But like I've only fought maybe two boss battles and I'm in like 6 or 7 hours and they weren't like real fights. They were like do activities and then eventually you beat them.
So it's like play volleyball until the boss dies.
Kind of. One of them was throw rusty swords at targets on the enemy until you can climb up on him and then sort of platform along him until you can throw him to the ground.
Okay, I mean, that sounds okay, though. I mean, not in the way you described it, but, like, I can see that being presented in a very cinematic, interactive way, which would be a really cool Shadow of the Colossus kind of boss fight.
Yeah, it is, but, I mean, I've only had one of those.
Yeah.
And I'm at least a fair distance into the story.
So you're saying, like, you need more of that.
I need more of something.
Yeah.
I need something to be
you
in
need
there more.
Gameplay.
So I can say this is the defining part of the game. Versus like, well, there's this, and then there's that, and then there's some stuff over here. I don't know. It's like decoupage. I don't know.
It's like an all-you-can-eat yogurt buffet.
Yeah, pretty much.
Vanilla yogurt.
No, not vanilla yogurt. It's like crazy brands of yogurt. Like, this is strawberry raisin yogurt. And you're just like, okay, that's great. I'll have a little bit of that. Like, nope, you can't have any more of that. Now you're on chocolate. I don't know. I'm having fun with it. It's just really strange and hard to describe. As a game.
But definitely, if you want your RPG scratch itched, it is the wrong game to do so.
Well, it depends on why you like RPGs. If you like RPGs because of, you know, the RPG combat system, yeah, it's not right. But if you like storytelling and stuff, then yeah, you're probably okay here. I mean, it's got a decent story to it, mm-hmm. as has been revealed up to this point. It's kind of weird, though, because the story is told in third-person omniscient, which you don't usually talk about in gameplay.
Yeah.
So you know things the characters don't know, including your character, which is kind of odd. Usually you don't see that a lot in games because they reveal stuff to you when they reveal it to the character because he is your avatar. But here, the character is just another character in the world, and you're kind of watching the story from the outside, primarily from his perspective, but you do see a lot of things he doesn't know.
So in the end, the E3 demo was fairly representative of the final game.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's a lot prettier than I thought the game was, and I think part of that had to do with how it was set up. I mean, it's a very good-looking game, has great sound. Square does a good job with the presentation. The camera's kind of busted. Not avatar busted, but obnoxious.
Yeah.
And the gameplay is just kind of a melange. I don't quite know what to make of it.
There's a whole lot of French, it sounds like.
Yeah, there is a lot of French. There's a lot of French.
It's a miasma melange.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Decoupage, if you will.
Yes.
Well, James, it's time to move on from all of your crazy stuff. So,
yeah.
Greg has some
Thank you.
PS3 updates, I guess.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll talk about that this week because I've played plenty of Prime Trilogy, Chrono Trigger, Boy and His Blob, you know, we've discussed all of those, so get into some of my PS3 endeavours a little bit. I picked up Pixel Junk Shooter, which I've enjoyed quite a lot. I've played into the beginning of the third episode now, so, yeah. You know, a decent way into it, obviously. And I've really enjoyed that. It's quite a relaxing sort of game to play, you know, with the music, the sound design, and the pace of the gameplay.
And it's easy.
It's pretty gentle. But I do like the way that the game's concepts are sort of slowly stack on top of each other. Mm. You know, you begin with the most simple stuff of just the water and the magma. And then they when they mix, they cool into rock that you can tunnel through. But then as you go on, you get ice introduced and you get different suits that you can have. And then you get a suit that actually turns everything on its head. So you're not worried about the ship overheating, but about it getting too cold. And all these things kind of just stack onto each other as it goes. It gets more complicated, but in a kind of gentle way, as is generally the case with the whole game. Actually, I think it's more interesting in its design. It's a bit like the sensation of playing The Blob a little, in the sense that it's, you know, it's kind of relaxed and the sound's kind of a big part of it. There's a little bit of an OCD element about getting all those secret little jewels and finding the off-screen caverns and stuff like that. So even obviously the puzzle elements and all that kind of stuff is, I think, more sophisticated than The Blob, which is very straightforward for the most part. It's satisfying in a similar way. But one thing I do really like that I've played so far is the two bosses. They're really cool. I enjoy
The third one is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I assume it would be being sort of the finale. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing that. And, of course, you know, Cube Games, the developers of the Pixel Jug series, they've got a couple games on DSi where now we've got, Reflect Missile or Trajectile, I think it's going to be called in America.
Yeah.
It just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they've got a tower defense game, which is like either called Starship Patrol or Starship Defense. Again, there's some regional stuff with that.
That one's not in America yet, but they also have DigiDrive.
And they also have DigiDrive, which they originally created a number of years ago for the Bit Generations. Although I would, if I had a DSi, I would buy that again. Because what the funny thing was is that I had DigiDrive, and a friend of mine had DigiDrive, and would like to play two-player, but you would have needed the Game Boy wireless multiplayer adapter for that. It didn't support the traditional cable. You had to have the wireless thing to play multiplayer.
Why?
But the thing is, if I bought it on DSiWare, my friend wouldn't even need to have a copy of the game, because I think it supports download play. So I would almost buy it just to try out the multiplayer that I never did years ago.
Well, it's only like 500 points, I think.
Yeah, it's cheap, which is, you know, I mean, it's a simple game in its core, but definitely really unique puzzle game. You know, so many puzzle games are fundamentally similar in terms of matching and all that kind of thing, but or combos, whatever. But this is radically different from that, which kind of makes it more intriguing to start with, and then it can become quite addictive. And I'd be interested to see how that kind of pans out in a two-player setting, but that's definitely very good, and I'd like to try out the other two, but I haven't quite been pushed over the edge on DSi yet, unfortunately. But yeah, the other thing I wanted to get to on the PS3 front is I picked up Killzone 2.
Maybe you can edit this, but I was just going to have you stop and say, wait, everybody, what's the least likely game that Greg could say right now?
Well, you see, I talk about not having played, you know, first-person shooters in a long time. The last one I owned was TimeSplitters 2. And I've played, you know, ones around friend's house, you know, a little bit of the multiplayer, played a bit of Perfect.Zero or things like that over the years, and friends here and there. But in terms of owning one and really playing it, you know, a lot just hasn't happened in a long time. So I was looking at, you know, you've got a PS3 now, you could get one.
Yeah, you could get Haze.
You could get Haze. There's lots of good
successor to Time Splitters, right?
Yeah. Well, that's sad.
Oh.
That
ouch.
Is sad.
Yeah. Oh,
PS3 exclusive, baby.
Oh, God.
Exclusively bad, yes. Yeah,
turned the tide, that one. So I thought, you know, I'll try one now, you know, see what I like. But in terms of the criteria for which to pick up, there is a couple of things. First of all, I'm looking at it purely as buying a one-player game, because when you've been out of it for 7 years... you're going to get murdered online.
Oh, yeah, I think it'll be fine. You just go right on in.
It's not even worth entertaining the idea.
Well, I think the mistake you made is you didn't start with something like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. I think that's where you can really get your opening, get your reintroduction to the genre. I think you'll do fine.
Yeah, so you know, looking at one-player game, you know, primarily, and it's something that I may not enjoy, frankly, so you know, let's go cheap. Let's minimize the risk. And Killzone 2 is a platinum, you know, greatest hits title over here, at least. So you can get it nice and cheap, and it was slightly reduced even from that. So low risk, you know, investment. Give it a go. Let's see if I can actually enjoy one of these games. And let's see how the genre has evolved while I've been away, so to speak. You know, and I've been enjoying it a fair bit, actually. I mean, certainly the visuals are very, very impressive. It's definitely the most impressive thing I have on the PS3. Mm-hmm. Remarkable stuff that they do with you know, different like effects, the lighting in particular. It's all very gritty and dark and you know, smoggy and nasty. It's kind of like fighting a high-tech war in Mordor most of the time.
Yeah.
But I did, the most recent part of the game that I got to is the Wastelands, which is a bit different because all of a sudden it's sort of sunny and more like Tatooine in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And that was quite striking, actually, once you go somewhere like that and then you see the graphics as being very impressive in a different light. But of course, in terms of the game design, it's designed, I think, especially if you're completely incompetent at it, as I am, to be quite slow. It's all about cover, and the enemy AI is quite impressive, how they kind of, you know, use the terrain and advance up it and use the cover and all that. So you kind of get into a rhythm of, you know, finding a good spot and picking people off and then advancing, finding another one. It's not too complicated. The checkpoints are very generous, which is definitely a big aid for me. So all of those things are fine, but what really tickled me about the game, and I was certainly expecting this, was the storytelling. I really found this funny. Now, the game opens, the title sequence opens with the voice of one of my absolute favourite actors in the world, which is Brian Cox. Now, most people might know him as Stryker in X-Men 2. But he's this Scottish theatre actor. He was actually the first person to play Hannibal Lecter on screen Man's Manhunter, which is a version of Red Dragon. I love him. I think he's a brilliant actor. So he opens, he's like, oh wow, they got Brian Cox. This is kind of cool. And he's very good at being the sort of, you know, the great dictator that you're going up against. That sounds good. Then you get introduced to the characters, the good guys, and it all goes downhill from there, really. the dialogue is abysmal. It really is. I mean, it's laced with profanity. But that isn't what makes it abysmal.
So it's this podcast, basically.
If you've seen something like Generation Kill, which is about a group of Marines going through the invasion of Iraq in 2003, then you know you can have the most obscene, disgusting, profane dialogue in the world, but it can have a certain sophistication to it, a certain humanity to it that makes it funny, that makes the characters relatable. And this falls so far short of that. You just can't get anywhere close. For instance, the opening sequence of the game, you're coming in on this sort of hovercraft sort of version of Private Ryan on the beach of Normandy. And, you know, loads of people are getting killed, all that. And one of the characters just screams, "This is bullshit!" And I was like, yes. Yes, it is. And there's a lot of stuff, just like James says in Avatar, in terms of like, enemies just garbling canned rubbish.
Yes.
Like, you know, all the enemies in the game are British, which is always a fun thing. They "Shit, I'm burning."
Yeah. When you set them on fire.
So bad. It's so hilariously bad. In particular, one of the absolute low point of the four characters that you're going with this alpha squad is Rico. He is terrible, terrible, terrible.
Well, I always wondered why they have his character the way he is, because he was the same way in the original Killzone, and the original Killzone is even more profanity laced, by the way. I mean, that game is just like F-bomb, F-bomb, F-bomb for like no reason whatsoever.
I thought you needed a Blu-ray to contain all this profanity.
Exactly. But yeah, Rico is just, and the thing is, there's never, what I don't understand is that there's never any, it's not like he's a jackass all the way through and then he somehow redeems himself. It doesn't happen. He's just an asshole all the way through.
Good. It's one
of these things, you know. It's like, I'm not asking for the guys to have a heart or to be nice guys. The attempts at banter are horrific. They're pretty much just all riffs on your mama jokes.
It's Army of Two, basically.
So it's like high school football practice.
Yeah, well, I think that's the audience that they're aiming at, isn't it? I mean, that's the problem.
See, I don't understand how developers can think this isn't awful.
And this elements of the storytelling, they seem to have put, you know, really quite a lot of effort into, And then it just all crashes on the shores of this silliness, this sort of sophomoric silliness. I think it's actually a shame in a way, because it does undermine the experience a little bit. Although, you know, you could just kind of laugh at it. But, you know, kind of as James says, I think if you was playing it and someone just walked in, you might feel slightly embarrassed.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were playing and it at the
thing
same
is,
time.
What I was saying too is that there's actually parts of Gears of War 2 that I think are even worse than that. Like there's parts
I can
of...
believe that from what I've heard, but I can't offer
but,
any
but see,
comparison.
Here's the thing. Cliff Bleszinski is an immature asshole from every way he puts himself out there.
I would say in Gears of War and Gears of War 2, when you hear a piece of dialogue that is clearly over the top and awful, they're doing it for laughs. Like, it's on purpose. Like, there's, I mean, you know, when they talk about 10 shit tons or something like that, I mean, it's awful, awful stuff, but obviously they know that. It's on purpose to some extent. Like they're kind of showing that these soldiers are idiots. That's one of the themes of the story, I would say.
I don't really feel like the general tone of the game really fits that. So I think it's trying to be gritty and it just kind of comes off as being silly.
Well, I thought it just hits every. I mean, to me, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is so bad. It's hilarious. There are parts of that, but to me, it was just like it's just everything is so cliche and just like, yep. Okay, you're angry.
Yeah, it's not very imaginative at all.
No,
it's my favorite Rico moment. he's about to shoot, you know, a bunch of these hell gas soldiers or whatever, and he just goes, "Eat my bullet."
I mean, it's basically like Rico to give you some background if you've never played the game. Rico is basically a cross between one of the Gears of War 2 characters and Scrappy Doo. That's effectively what he's like.
Let me at him.
I'll splat him. That's Rico. It's ridiculous. I mean, as chill as you get. He's a cardboard cutout of a character.
He is hilarious. he probably sounded more like Fat Bastard from Austin Powers when I did it, but you know, I can't.
It works.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest playing it online, though, because the online mode is actually really deep, and you can rank up your character.
Oh, that's my understanding, yeah, even though that's not the basis on which I bought it, because chances are I never will get into that.
It'll be really deep, but you'll never experience it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, if you go online thinking, I mean, really with any first-person shooter, if you go online thinking you're going to become, like, a master of it, or you'll become some top-flight player, just understand that, I mean, those top-flight players, dude, it's the only game they play, and
it's a tiny fraction of the people that play it.
Yeah,
but I mean, to me, when you know, it's to be out so long, even penetrating that layer to the point where you could just enjoy it, you know, it's not a ritual massacre.
Yeah,
is probably beyond my skill for quite some time.
All I want when I go online with a game is to have fun for a few minutes, and if I don't, I'm through.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd probably try it eventually, maybe after I've beaten the single player and got sort of acclimated a little more.
All right. Well, it's time for John in this epic new business.
Wow. Yeah. From Killzone 2, we go to Wii Sports Resort. How's that for a...
Trade in places, eh?
Yeah. How's about that?
Which one of us is Dan Aykroyd in this scenario? Yeah. Does that make James Jamie Lee Curtis?
See, yes. my first thought was actually that we're still going forward in time, albeit now we're only about 6 months ago, as opposed to before we were
a year to a year ago.
Always behind the curve, indeed. It's kind of a retrospective, if you will.
Yes.
This is for Christmas I got the Wii Sports Resort pack with the two Wii Motion Plus, which actually is great, because really I can't think of, I mean, getting this with only one.
It's a prerequisite. Yeah, well, I got the Tiger bundle at pretty much the same time.
Yeah, I got it with one and had to buy another one. I feel like a fucker because the 2 version one came out like a month later.
Yeah.
It's a good deal.
Yep.
Very good deal.
So, yeah, so, I mean, in this package, you get both Motion Plus add-ons and the two condoms.
Of course. Yeah, yep. Well, they're one and the same. They're inseparable.
Yes, they are.
They're not inseparable. They're just pre-installed.
They're not really, but Nintendo wants you to treat them as if they are.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things I kind of thought right off the bat is that Nintendo obviously really doesn't want you to separate the Motion Plus from your controller.
Well, and you have to change the batteries. That's my problem with the condos, yeah. Is that it's just a pain to change batteries. You know?
Now, the one thing that I did find really, really useful with it is from Nyko. I got a review unit for their charge base IC, which is...
Has it caught on fire yet?
is that what they're saying?
Some of those other charge units have done this, yes. Yeah,
well, because I also... A while back, years back, I reviewed I didn't review it. I actually just bought it. It was the original charge base, where you just take your Wii remote. You know, it has the pack that you put the recharger pack that you put in. But this one is actually pretty cool because it's designed to work with the Wii remotes when they're wrapped in the condom along with Motion Plus.
Yeah.
So what it is it's a stand. It's a two Wii remote stand with magnets on it, so instead of plopping it down in and making with two contacts sticking up, you actually just put it onto this magnetized rack. And so that lets you keep everything. You don't have to take anything out of the condom or anything like that. You can just, they just suck right onto this rack, and you can just leave them there and they charge. So that's really good.
Normally I would tell people, don't ever buy a custom fit rechargeable battery pack for your device. Mm-hmm. If it takes double A's, buy rechargeable double A's, because
yes,
they'll work in everything. There's no sense in having like specialized, you know, Wii remote battery packs. But I think this would be the exception because of the difficulty of taking the batteries out when you've got the whole damn thing put together.
Mm-hmm.
It actually sounds kind of convenient to just throw it on this thing and let it recharge.
Yeah, it's really, really convenient. So that's the charge base IC if anybody wants to check it out.
So the game, Wii Sports Resort?
Wii Sports Resort. Yeah, what it reminds me of is the Epics, and I kind of say this, I feel like I refer to these quite a bit, but it just goes to show you that I feel like, you know, good game mechanics or good game concepts are always good. And what Wii Sports Resort reminds me of, because it's kind of a whole bunch of events, it reminds me of like the Epics Winter Sports.
California Games.
Not California Games so much as like stuff like Winter Games.
Summer Games.
Summer Games. Yeah, those kind of ones where, you know, you had a series of events and each event has a single game mechanic that is kind of exploited in different ways but never really changes. And I was thinking this kind of led me to sort of what Nintendo has mastered or what kind of makes them tick or what works for them. And what they tend to do is they take a simple game mechanic that anybody can grasp, but then they add kind of external sort of factors that affect the ways in which you use that mechanic. But they always keep that mechanic roughly the same. Like, you know, like Mario, he jumps. That's generally what he does. They add little tweaks here and there. But if you can learn how to jump, you've mastered probably about 80% of what Mario's going to do. And it's very much the same in a lot of these Wii Sports Resort events.
Well, I guess, I mean, they do that with the archery to the extent you get some weird, like, you know, they just start increasing the distance and then you get some weird wind conditions, which culminates in the one in the volcano where actually, because of the heat rising, it forces it up. So, I mean, that's kind of a good example of how they evolve the gameplay, but it's obviously fundamentally the same throughout. Yeah. It's just archery.
Well, you've got an interesting theory there, John.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that's like, I thought it's interesting that Greg mentioned that, because that was one of those things. It's kind of like, even though you think, whatever, it's just an archery game, I get it. They always add like small tweaks, like, oh, okay, so now I have to compensate for the wind. Oh, well, now that I'm further away from the target, now I have to kind of aim up a little bit so that the arch of the arrow, when it's in flight, you know, there's always like little kind of layers like that.
I always love the fact the final part of the sword play, the final setting when you play the one player kick the crap out of 100 Mii's mode or whatever,
mm-hmm,
is in the volcano. It's a very Revenge of the Sith ending.
I haven't got there yet. I've just basically took
no, that is exhausting getting there. I found it exhausting anyway.
It is. You're just physically tired.
Yeah, I mean, of the ones that stuck out to me, I liked the wakeboarding. That was very fun. Archery was cool. Basketball was cool.
Table tennis is, to me, mind-blowing.
I love it. The table tennis is really good. It's just that's got that full tactile kind of thing going on, and just the sense of being able to manipulate the shot in a sort of very subtle way.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about table tennis is that because it's more confined than the original tennis and in the original Wii Sports, the fact that your player moves automatically, it doesn't bother me at all in table tennis because you don't really have anywhere to go. You know,
yeah.
Like you're not, the character's not really moving that much. So there's less of a disconnect between.
It's relatively kind of trivial part of the game, whereas in tennis, your player's positioning is a pretty massive part of the game, which is taken over for you.
Now, I did have a problem with that, kind of getting my paddle in the right way. Either I had it on the left, so I couldn't hit the ball correctly, or I had to like bring it all the way around to the right.
Yeah, see, that's the kind of the first revelation about it, because that does not apply Wii Sports Tennis at all.
Yeah.
You suddenly realize, oh, I've got to have it on the right side of me.
Yeah.
Because your character won't just move to make your stance right, you know what I mean? You've got to get that correct, and that's one of the things where immediately it's like, yes, this is very different from Wii Sports Tennis. It's a lot more involved, really.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I thought canoeing was actually pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I thought it was pretty neat.
I heard such bad things about canoeing that I haven't even tried it.
I've tried it once. It's canoeing. I mean, I don't think it's done.
That's exactly it. You know what I mean? Well, what I liked about it was the fact that, I mean, it does control exactly like a canoe would. So you kind of have to think ahead. I mean, even just going, you know, left, right. You won't go completely straight, so you kind of have to
judge. It's definitely got that nuance in there, and it did make me think, I wish I had this in that bit in Mario Sunshine when you're in the lava. Do you remember that? You're in the boat in the lava. Oh. God, I would have killed for someone in the control that. Well, I said, spray this side, spray that side. I've sprayed two. Oh, jeez Louise, what the hell were they thinking with that?
If I recall, it's been a while since I played Sunshine, but I think a lot of times I would just get close enough to the land, you know, wherever I wanted to
jump out and then hover there.
Jump out and hover to it, you know, or even I would take in the super boost, the super jump module.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, like, try to use that to land on the far side rather than deal with the fucking boat.
it's
almost more difficult, but at least it's kind of different. It's less frustrating.
Yeah, it's less tedious, I think, is my thing.
All right, well, I guess it's my turn now. Hopefully my voice will hold out here before we take a break. I don't have a whole lot to say. I have been traveling heavily since the last recording, so I had 2 days on the road driving by myself, which was pretty terrible. I did get to listen to a lot of podcasts, but I didn't get any gaming, really, and then I had a whole day of flying back to Colorado. So, really, I downloaded a couple things as soon as I got back. After hearing some of the Giant Bomb discussion, they gave an award for weirdest game, which is a great category, and their winner was Nobi Nobi Boy, which is the PS3 weird-ass thing from the guy who made Katamari Damacy a long time ago, and it's only $5. It's been out for almost a whole year now, so it's not new, but it was something that, like, when I first got my PS3, I considered downloading Nobi Nobi Boy, but there were just these other download games that I wanted to give priority to, and so I just hadn't gotten around to it. And everything those guys said about it just told me, like, I need to get this. And it's one of those things, like, even if you only play it a couple of times, it's probably worth having, just because it's so funny and weird. It's definitely something I'm going to show to friends when they come over. I mean, Katamari Damacy is a game that I've actually shown off to people because it's hilarious and you get it, you know, like it makes sense and yet nothing about it makes any sense. So people understand how to play it pretty quickly and they get the idea of it and they think it's cool. But at the same time, that game never lets up on the bizarreness, you know. And Nobi Nobi Boy, though, is much weirder than Katamari. Like, I just don't even know how to describe it. I mean, you play as this worm guy, snake kind of guy, and he looks kind of like the prince in Katamari, but he's like a caterpillar, and you can control his...
This isn't going well, Johnny.
I know. Well, so he has two legs up front under his face, and then he has two legs under his tail, and you control the front segment and the tail segment independently with the two different joysticks on the controller. So you can walk basically in two different directions at the same time. And as you do that, the middle just kind of stretches out and it wraps around whatever. And you can eat things like just random objects and people and animals. And in that sense, it's a little bit like Katamari, but the goal of the game doesn't seem to be very much related to eating things. I think that's almost just kind of a trivial, fun thing to do that they put in there. So apparently the object of the game is to stretch, but to stretch, you just push the joysticks in opposite directions, and now you're stretching. So, I mean,
is this the one with the weird meta game about everyone's, you know, aggregate length that plays the game reaching the moon or something? Is
Yeah. Oh, they're up to Jupiter now.
Jupiter, right?
and I guess perfect. Each planet is a different level that you can play on. I haven't actually figured out how to get to those planets, because the other thing is the interface is totally bizarre. There aren't really menus. It's funny, when you first start up Nobunobu Boy, you get this tutorial to teach you the controls of the game. But the thing is, it only teaches you about half the controls of the game. And also, the tutorial is presented as a quiz in which you just kind of have to guess at the answers. And then when the tutorial is over, it says, well, there's not really any point to this game. Have fun.
Oh, good. Thanks.
And then it just sets you free. And then you spend 30 minutes messing around. And that's pretty much what the game is. It is a sandbox without missions. Like, it is...
It's half a game.
And it's priced like half a game. So, you know, and I kind of expected that going in. But, like, it's almost not a game. It's more of a toy.
They built the mechanics of the game and then didn't give it a goal.
Right. There's
essentially
no objective.
Making it like playing Monopoly where there's no money.
Sounds like an art project.
It is really an art project, much more than, you know, something like Flower. Like Flower is very artsy, but it's a game. I mean,
yeah, it has a goal.
It has levels and objectives and an ending. And Nobunobu Boy is just a fucked up, funny toy. And it's one of those things, like, I mess around with it for like half an hour, and I don't know if I'm going to play it again, and I like it, but, like, I don't really know what else there is for me to do or what more I can get out of it. It's one of these weird things that you just kind of feel compelled to experience, even though you know you're going to be disappointed and maybe not sure what to make of it.
Well, here's the question. Should someone go play it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
I also downloaded Castlevania Rebirth, which finally came out in America on WiiWare. It's a good game from what I can tell. I've only played a couple levels of it. It's fairly difficult. I like the bosses so far. I like the eyeball boss. The second boss, actually, this kind of weird green guy, he kind of looks like the Hulk, but then he gets really skinny all
of
a sudden.
Yeah, that's weird, that one.
I don't like him. I don't like that boss fight.
I don't like you,
Ten-year-old Johnny comes out to play there. I don't like you.
He's not coming to Johnny's birthday party.
I find that his attacks are almost unfairly difficult to dodge given the amount of movement that your character has. So I mean, maybe I just don't know how to play against him, but I'm having a really hard time beating him because it feels like I'm not really properly equipped. I don't know. But the graphics are better than I expected. They definitely don't look like an NES game. They don't really even look like a Super NES game. I think they look better than that. So it's maybe kind of
super,
a 32-bit looking thing-ish, 32-bit-ish. The music is pretty good so far, although very standard Castlevania stuff, but that's fine. I'm not the world's biggest Castlevania fan, but I like it good enough. I like it well enough, so seems like a good purchase for me. I'll be playing deeper into it. The last thing I want to talk about to wrap up this long-ass segment is not one game, but a whole bunch of games I played at Boomer's Arcade in Florida. It's pretty close to Hollywood, which is where I was talking about last time with Billy Mitchell's restaurant and everything. And it turns out this place, Boomer's, I don't know if it's the arcade that I went to when I was younger, but it's not the one in the movie King of Kong, because this is not like a museum-style arcade. This is more of a modern arcade. It's just really big. So all the games that they have in there, and this place, it's pretty, you can see it from the interstate. It has a wooden roller coaster, which is not that great, but it has mini golf and go-karts and shit. But the arcade is quite large, and they have a lot of arcade games in there. And they go back to, I'd say, the early 90s, maybe the mid-90s is putting it better. I mean, some of the older games that we saw in there were like X-Men versus Street Fighter Time Crisis 2.
Mm,
nothing super old. And now that I think about it, I think maybe I understand why, because I think they probably used to have a lot of games from the 80s, and they just eventually broke down completely to the point of being absolutely unplayable. Because my friend and I, when we walked in there, we saw they had a sign that said something like Sundays and Thursdays, you could get unlimited arcade play, unlimited video games for $12. You know, they give you like a card like at Dave and Buster's, but it's just unlimited play. And I said, hey, isn't it Thursday? Or like, yeah. So we look in there, we walk around and see how many games they have. They have tons of like old school Capcom fighting games, some interesting brawlers like Dungeons and Dragons 2, which I'd never played before. They had Gauntlet Legends, but the screen was busted. But they had a lot of light gun games. Time Crisis, Ghost Squad, The Lost World, a bunch of stuff.
Target Terror, please.
Yes, they did. They did have Target Terror.
And yes. You played it, correct?
We played it for a couple of minutes.
Did you get to the golf course bit?
No, we played it. We were in the airport. But the problem with Target Terror is that being in the arcade, you couldn't hear it. And I have to think a lot of the humor would be from the sound, because, you know, these guys come up on the screen and they're saying things at you. You're like, I want to know what you're telling me, man.
It's definitely one to have the headphones on for sure.
That game's ridiculous. Although, I have to, this is going to sound weird, but I was surprised that Target Terror looked kind of okay graphically. For the kind of game that it is, like, you know, the full motion video capture that they did on all these terrible actors is like pretty crisp and high quality video. I was expecting it to be on the level of like Area 51, and it's not. I mean, it's fully 10 or 15 years newer than Area 51.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that Target Terror would look better, but you think motion capture light gun game, you know, it's going to look like the first Mortal Kombat, and it doesn't. It does actually look somewhat more modern than that, but you know what I mean? So we ended up buying the unlimited cards, but we were severely disappointed as we actually went around and started actually playing all these games. We found that nearly every single one we touched was broken in some way. And it went from like screens had really strange color blurring and like, you know, just the whole screen would be off color. We played some fighting games where some of the buttons don't work. You know, I mean, you can't play Marvel vs. Capcom without a fierce punch. Like, you can't, there's so many things in that game you can't do. You can't even switch your characters out if you don't have that. You can't do your supers. I mean, it's just fucked up. And we played light gun games where the triggers didn't work, or the whole thing was just miscalibrated. So, you know, it would always shoot like 2 or 3 inches diagonally up and to the left of where you actually pointed at. It just pissed me off. I played a DDR game where the whole stand would rock from front to back as I stepped on the pad. So the buttons worked, but the whole thing is just shaking constantly as I jump around on it. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I tried to play this Taiko Drum Master kind of a game, but one of the percussion pads was missing, so I couldn't hit it. So I couldn't really play the song, because it was like trying to play Guitar Hero with only 3 buttons. I tried to play Guitar Hero Arcade, and I've never played that before. The controller's really heavy. But what I found is that the fret buttons on the Guitar Hero Arcade, not responsive enough to play on hard. Not at all. Like,
is it
because... can't really slide from one button to the next. A lot of times they just don't register because you didn't mash them hard enough.
Is it because they have to be built to a higher standard due to the abuse they're going to take?
Oh, yeah, you can tell that it's meant to be more durable, but it's also less responsive, which is a killer in Guitar Hero, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's either that or they have to replace it every...
Yeah, and evidently at that particular establishment, it wouldn't get replaced.
Yep.
Exactly. I mean, it just became obvious that they do zero maintenance on these machines. And it was sad because looking around, I mean, you know, it's obviously not like a classic arcade in terms of the game selection, but these are the games that my friend and I grew up with, you know, like the brawlers and the fighting games from the mid 90s, the light gun stuff. We love that stuff. We were excited when we looked around and saw that they had 200 arcade machines from that exact period of time, all the way up through, you know, fairly recent stuff. And then we found out that almost every game we played was broken in some way. And it was very, very disappointing.
I've just got this image in my mind now of you played Sega Rally and the steering wheel coming off in your hands.
Yeah, it was almost that bad. It was so sad. I mean, how can you have all these great arcade machines here? One of the best selections I've ever seen, and none of them is in good working order. It's just really sad. So eventually we debated, you know, talking to the manager, trying to get a refund or something, and finally just decided that, like, every employee we saw there couldn't have been older than 16. And we finally decided it's not worth ruining some kid's day. So instead, we just left, and on the way out, we gave our unlimited cards to people walking in and said, here, enjoy, if you can. You know? Yeah. And so I decided that my revenge on Boomer's Arcade would be to talk about it on this show.
There you go.
Just let people know that if you are in South Florida, do not go to Boomer's Arcade.
So, in other words, Johnny cares more about teenage arcade employees than he does about us.
Yeah, basically. He's ruined our day. There's another arcade. It's not Boomer's. I think GameWorks, maybe? It's in Orlando. That's gigantic, that I've been to, that they take much better care of than what you're describing.
I would think, yeah, because, you know, they would have so many tourists going through there.
Actually, GameWorks is in Miami. It's the City Walk Arcade in Orlando. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure any of those arcades would be better than Boomer.
Oh, GameWorks is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of my new business. I hope you're still with us on this show. And now we're going to take a break for us and for you. And when we come back, we have at least one bit of listener mail. We'll see if we have time for anything else after that. So we'll be back in a minute.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Nintendo World Report kicks off the new year with a full slate of content for Nintendo fans to enjoy.
On the blog front, Pedro shares some hilarious Nintendo commercial parodies, and Zach Miller shows off his pixel block art.
Zach also reviews Academy of Champions Soccer on the Wii, and Andy reviews Need for Speed Nitro on DS.
We also have new editions of our Radio Trivia and NWR Newscast podcasts for your listening pleasure.
That's all for this week, but keep checking out NWR for the best daily coverage of Nintendo on the net. See you next week. Yeah, it's 2010, and we got some predictions to make. So let me preface this. This is kind of a pseudo listener mail segment. We got an interesting letter from a listener, and I'll read that now. This is from Ryan from Anaheim, California, and he writes, "Hey, hey, RFN crew, I'd like to hear everyone's Nintendo predictions for 2010. Will we get info on the next Nintendo handheld? Will Pachter be right about Wii HD? Will Metroid Other M actually make it out or be delayed into 2011? What will Nintendo announce at E3? What will be the 2010 holiday lineup? I think it would be fun to get the regular crew's predictions on record during an early 2010 podcast and revisit them in a year's time." Well, in a year from now, we'll all be dead. But we will make
exactly.
Some predictions here.
That's 2012, actually.
I think it's a great idea. We might stretch this out a little bit, so that's why I said I don't know for sure if we'll have any more listener mail after this, but 2010 predictions. I sort of tasked everyone with coming up with some bold predictions. I said, put your nuts on the table. Let's go bold here. Let's go big.
Pecan.
So, yes, so we're going to hopefully make some predictions here that are specific, that are surprising, that could go very, very, very wrong, but we're going to throw some ideas out there and get you excited for a lot of shit that won't actually happen. That's what we specialize in here on Radio Free Nintendo. I do want to set out a couple of rules before we get going. I think it's best to assume, partly because it is most likely true, that we have no special kind of insider knowledge of what's actually going to happen this year. I mean, generally speaking, we don't know anything that we haven't already told you, because it's our job to tell you what we know. And you know, being the kind of website that we are, we usually don't have any super awesome, like, insider stuff. So all these predictions are based on conjecture, speculation, logical follow-through on...
to varying degrees.
Yeah. Some of it may just be hopes and dreams, but I think for the most part, these will be things that we expect to happen based on our knowledge of Nintendo and the gaming industry and how these things usually go, and try to mix some confounding factors together and see what might come out of it. So that's kind of the process here, I think. At least it was for me. And with that, we'll get started. So I think the first thing would be, obviously, Nintendo has kind of announced or half announced a lot of first party games that may or may not come out in 2010. So this came up in an email thread among the staff earlier today about, you know, which of these games do we actually think are going to come out in 2010. So I thought that'd be a good place to start this, because I know there's a little bit of contention here among our crew.
A little bit, yeah. That I'm right and you're not. That is the contention. that's basically
classic
it.
Classic James debate.
I will be the final judge and go.
Yes. I know where James stands on this. I'm not sure about John, but I think Greg and I are pretty much in agreement on the following schedule. I'm expecting Sin and Punishment 2 around April. Possibly they might spring it on us in March and say, oh yeah, you remember that schedule we showed you? Well, we have a bonus game.
Here's a blood-curdling way of putting it. They're going to put it in the Excite Bots hole.
Oh yeah.
That's going to happen. April, slip it.
That's happening, yeah. But, well, no, I don't know. It might get more than Excitebox, because at least it was at an E3.
It might get more publicity, but certainly in terms of the timing in the calendar.
Yeah, at least it had a booth to be played.
Yeah,
at
it's already got more publicity. There isn't really a debate there, to be honest.
April's not necessarily a bad month. I mean, I think Wii Fit came out in April.
Wii Fit and Mario Kart Wii. Yeah. I mean, 2 years ago, they were, you know, the big ones. It's not necessarily a death sentence by any means.
If anyone can make it work, it's Nintendo.
Yeah, I think it'll be going against other huge games. I mean, I don't know. A lot of the games, I think, are going to appeal to Nintendo fans anyways, regardless. But there's a lot of other big games coming out in that kind of
window.
Well,
end of March is a big time for the for some of the HD console stuff, because it's all the stuff that got pushed out that's got to fit in the fiscal year. So Final Fantasy 13 and God of War and all.
Yeah, Gran Turismo 5 supposedly is coming out at that point. Big games like that.
Yeah. I mean, HD console-wise, that'll be a really busy period, so I don't know. I don't know if that'll affect their thinking at all, to be honest.
Yeah, there are a lot of games coming out in March that are too big to fail. So I think
Sin
of Punishment 2, it might be an April kind of a thing. Now, this is a little riskier, but I think it follows with what we've been told and how things seem to be going. But I'm expecting Mario to be a summer release, and by that I'm talking May or June.
Yeah, I agree on this one.
I mean, if nothing else, Mario Sunshine was released in June in Japan, and I think August in America. So there's precedent for this particular franchise. We also know that, you know, Miyamoto even said at E3, it's basically done. We're just going to kind of hold it off. I think 6 months after New Super Mario Bros. Wii, it's now safe to do another Mario game.
Yeah, and also, you know, they had Punch-Out this year in summer. I think it could fulfill a similar kind of role, but just on a larger scale. You know, in terms of filling out the release schedule. But, you know, I don't think they're going to hold it all the way back to the holiday, is the point. And therefore, where is it going to go from there? And I think, you know, the summer at some point is where it's going to fit in.
It makes sense to me. It does.
Yeah. I mean, it may even be a little earlier. It may even be a little closer to that Mario Kart Wii Fit period, because they may not, you know, give too much of a crap about how it encroaches on Sin and Punishment 2 or whatever else they've got for that time. So, you know, it could be even earlier than that, potentially, but I don't necessarily see it being much later.
A summer release makes sense once, you know, Nintendo reveals that Galaxy 2 takes place on Delfino Island. So, I think Metroid Other M is an August-September release.
August is pretty much locked in. You know, we've seen Trilogy came out in August, September.
Corruption came out in early September, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty much when it comes out in America, at least. It's danced around a little more in Europe, but I have to agree with that. It seems like they think that's a good time to put a Metroid game on sale. It's in terms of the sort of cyclical nature of the year.
You know, Nintendo learned a big lesson with Metroid Prime 2 Echoes. Metroid it doesn't have the cachet to launch it up against Halo. And there is a Halo game coming out this holiday season, probably in November.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if Metroid comes out this year, it's coming out in August or September.
Yeah, it'll have to be in a sort of dead period.
Yeah, I mean, August is not that dead, but I think it's a safe time to release Metroid. It's going to get the attention it deserves in that time frame, whereas when you dump it out November 22nd, it's not.
Yeah, well, the thing is, even last time with Metroid Prime 3, it actually went up against BioShock.
Yeah.
Came out the same week, I believe.
But they were both going for that same kind of window, weren't they? BioShock being what it was, your kind of original title. I don't think they wanted to put it up against something really huge that would have come in the holiday season. And they were right, because it got tremendous attention and got obviously helped by the fact that the game was good and got all the good reviews. And then did sell really quite well. So mm-hmm. I think as it applies to BioShock and as it applies to Metroid, it's a kind of proven strategy. So as long as the game's development doesn't throw things off.
But does the type of game really factor into this now? Because
it's different.
Other M isn't the same kind of game as the Prime games are.
No, I think that,
well,
that's...
Okay, well, let's say it's a $50 Shadow Complex. Shadow Complex came out in August.
Yeah, but Shadow Complex is a download game. It's a different market.
Yeah, and a lot of download games come out in the summer, don't they?
I mean, they don't really seem to care about competing with disc-based
games.
But
I think probably the audience is still going to be a lot of the same people.
Well, yeah, but I think those same people would buy it regardless of when it came out. I don't think Nintendo is as concerned about this as you all make them out to be. I think in the past they've shown willingness to go up against games they probably shouldn't have. But in this case, there's not much like this game on the market. It's a 2D action game, essentially.
But the other thing is, people, the mass market that they would like to sell Metroid to, they don't know what kind of game this is. So
do they even want to sell Metroid to a mass market, though?
No, you can't.
The mass market has never bought
Metroid.
They would like to.
No, Metroid Other M is not a mass market game. It's a niche title.
It's a very large niche.
Yeah, but it's like F-Zero.
John, that's a perfect example. It's like F-Zero.
But the most important thing to do is that everyone who would be interested in buying this game doesn't end up in a situation where they're buying too many other games and it's like, I'll get back to that one. And then it softens the opening and they buy it at cut price or they don't buy it at all. That's the problem that they want to avoid. And that's why they've been putting it in August before. And while they'll probably do it again, as long as the development doesn't mean that they can't.
Again, Nintendo learned their lesson in 2004 with Prime 2 and Halo 2.
They won't do that again.
But... I mean, I would have thought if the development causes a problem, it'll go into early 2011 rather than go into the holiday. That would be my thought, that they would actually bump it out. But my feeling is that they probably kept quiet about it until they felt really confident that it would come out in 2010. So I don't think that's likely to happen.
And the E3 presentation last year said 2010.
Yeah, explicitly 2010, yeah. So,
I mean, let's
not
be honest.
That that's irrevocable.
That's hardly...
At that time, they expected it. I mean, that's more than we got from Zelda, which is just a big TBA. But I actually think Zelda will be out this November. I think Zelda is the big holiday game, not Mario. Like I said, I think Mario's coming out in the summer. I think Zelda is the big holiday game that will come out the week of Thanksgiving or the week before Thanksgiving. And Iwata basically said as much today, actually, said Zelda will be out in 2010. Now, that could be only for Japan. We did have the situation in 2002 where you had Metroid Prime out in November.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it only in America and at the time. It came out in Europe and Japan a little bit later.
Which one came out? There was one of them that came out December in Japan and then came out shortly afterwards.
That's Wind Waker. Which is what Johnny was about to...
And that could be... Yeah, that could be where this is going. It could be that Zelda is out in Japan in December and we have to get it in the spring in the US. But the way they've been doing Zelda games ever since Wind Waker, they've been releasing them pretty much day and day.
Yeah.
So I think the days of waiting 3 months to get a Zelda game translated are over.
I think part of that is the fact that the Zelda, at least the Zelda console games, haven't sold nearly as well in Japan as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer the target market. It can't be, because it doesn't sell very well there.
Zelda is a global property, and it just makes sense to spend the localization resources to get it released more or less simultaneously. And I think that's basically what they're doing these days. So I don't expect there to be a 3 or 4 month wait on that.
And I mean, even before Iwata, you know, indicated a bit more strongly than we've had before that it would make 2010 and all that, my thought on it would be, if Zelda isn't a vehicle for Motion Plus this year, what the hell would be? I mean, are you literally going to go 18 months after Wii Sports Resort comes out and Nintendo are going to do virtually nothing with Motion Plus? I mean, you know, surely they need Zelda to come along and make a good use out of it with a holiday release this coming year. I mean, who knows? Again, development could throw a monkey wrench in the best laid plans, but I feel fairly confident that they're going to live up to this one.
Let's not joke here that at the time, they didn't even... There was a time where they weren't sure they were going to even put Motion Plus in the new Zelda game.
Yeah, they kind of... Their heads, oh, it depends how well Wii Sports Resort sells.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of gave themselves an out there.
I think that's a fudge. That was a fudge.
You know, I was one of the people at the press conference when Miyamoto said that about it depends on Wii Sports Resort. It was obvious he was making a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does a lot of jokes like that, and out of context, people misinterpret them quite often, but it was a joke. I mean, we all knew Wii Sports Resort would be a mega hit, and we all knew Zelda would be using Motion Plus. Mm-hmm. He actually told us how to expect it to be used in Zelda at the same meeting. That's been decided a long time ago. And for the best, because it means it's integrated into the very fabric of what that game is. It won't be tacked on. So it's really a decision they would need to make early.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what we're saying here is next year we're going to have Sin and Punishment, Mario,
this year.
Metroid, this year. Zelda, this year.
That's right, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think
Sin and Punishment's a blip on the radar for Nintendo. That doesn't factor into...
Yeah, it's not particularly important for them. But in general, you're looking at the big three in terms of franchises, which came out fairly close together in the aftermath of the Wii launch. But this would definitely be a pretty condensed kind of timeline on this occasion, but I think it's the kind of thing that could happen here. I mean, you know, as we've said, there's been these gaps in the lineup before, and this is kind of those chickens coming home to roost a little bit. Yep. You know, if there's gaps before, then you're probably going to get crunches a little later.
And the schedule, as I've laid it out here, it does give these games enough room. It's not like you're dropping all three in the same month.
No.
And that's part of why I think Mario's coming out fairly early in the year, because it's ready to go. They need a game before August here. They need something in the middle of the year to hold it down, because at this point, we're really moving into a year-round release schedule more and more. And thank goodness, I mean, it's about damn time the industry got to this point. And Nintendo is not only part of that, but really a pioneer in that. The way that they've released games, especially for Wii, has been almost, you know, we don't care what month it is. When we're ready, when we want to make some money, we're going to hit that button, and I think this is going to be a banner year for that. I think they're going to really space things out here and get a lot of big games out all in the same year. I really do.
I mean, I agree. I think what's interesting is I think it's inevitable that Zelda will be paired with something more in the expanded audience area for the holiday, and that's really going to be... That's almost certainly going to be something that will be announced at E3. Possibly a vitality sense.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I can't believe that's what it'll be.
John's got plans for that vitality sensor.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and they might do something kind of minor like Wii Music Plus.
They've talked about that.
That sounds cynical, but Wii Fit Plus was one of their tent poles in 2009 holiday.
Well, I don't think Wii Music was a significant enough hit for them to do that.
No, but Miyamoto thinks they can make it work. He's I want another chance. It sold 2 million copies, you know. Like,
yeah, it's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, regardless.
No, I mean, it's not. But you would think they would try to work on one of the other ones that they've already done that worked, that sold 8 million copies.
The biggest disappointment of Wii Music, as I sort of said before, is just that, you know, they gave it the big platform. The E3, when they released it that year with Animal Crossing, you know, that was the big, big primetime platform, when it probably would have been better off being a little earlier. But yeah, I guess it's just because they didn't have anything else.
They got shunted
into prime time when it probably was never intended or ready for it, you know, really, but they just tried to make it work. a second go round, they could probably do things a bit more in proportion, a bit more appropriate, mm-hmm. and not, you know, take the spotlight away from something that would sell more copies.
So James, you seem to be really upset by this schedule when I put it out in the email today. So, I mean, give me your side of it.
Well, Zelda's not coming out this year, period.
Why not?
They never hit target on Zelda games, ever. It never happens. They haven't hit the target on a Zelda console game since what? Majora's Mask?
Nope. That one was late.
They just never do it. I mean, there's no reason to believe they're going to start doing it now.
But maybe they waited longer before setting this one up. Because, I mean, this is the first Zelda console game in 4 years.
It's been in development a long time.
The gap is the same as between Wind Waker and Twilight Princess.
I feel like if the game had been in development a long time, and if it actually were somewhere further along, they would have done more than the here's a picture treatment that it got at E3.
But I know what you mean, but look, New Super Mario Bros. Wii was the title this holiday season.
But no one
knew about it until 4 months beforehand or whatever. I mean, right. this is a different world we're living in.
It's such a minor title by comparison. I mean,
the scope of New Super Mario Bros. Wii, yeah, you know, is not comparable.
It is.
To the scope
I mean, it's,
a, new
it's also an
yet.
Iterative title. I mean, it's really
yeah.
New
no,
Super
it,
Mario Bros.
It is. But I've just said that the way they like to control information now is very different.
You say that, but then they did the Metroid Other M. I mean, they
yeah,
gave that
and
a...
that, and if that comes out, if that does come out when Johnny's projecting it's coming out. Or I would project it would come out, which is barely more than a year after it was first revealed. That is a pretty tight turnaround compared to the old days in itself.
But see, they showed so much more of it, too.
Well, they showed a lot more FMV of it.
James, notice that almost every other day we have some new quote from Eiji Aonuma about the new Zelda game. I mean, he's out talking it up.
He's definitely campaigning it for sure.
Spilling details. He is trying to get people on the hype train. Why would he do that if it's not coming out until 2011?
Because they always do shit like this and then they delay it.
But we all live in a different world.
I'm not saying they don't plan on releasing it in 2010. I'm saying it's going to miss the target.
Okay, you're just being pessimistic about the schedule.
No, I'm being realistic because they always miss the target.
Yeah, but let's assess what's changed. First of all, you know, Wii Motion Plus, I think, does complicate the development and could mean that it's more likely to have snags that might drag it down.
Yeah, I mean, they have to re-engineer things for Wii Motion Plus.
Than the average Wii go. I think that's a fair point. However, in general, you know, the hardware for them is not anything new. The Wii's been out plenty of time. It's based on the GameCube, so there's no issues there. But also, in the past, in many ways, they were under pressure to talk about stuff very far forward, but especially in the GameCube period and after the whole Pac-Man versus 2003 calamity. They had to talk about Twilight Princess as soon as humanly possible to say, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Don't all slit your collective Nintendo wrists. Mm-hmm. Now they don't have to do that.
You don't think that last year's E3, so not... The one we had, but the one before that, is the same kind of calamity as the Pac-Man versus?
Every E3 is a different situation. I mean, in 2008, by the time E3 came, Nintendo's balls were drained. They had just released Wii Fit, Mario Kart, and Brawl. And everything else they have is way out on the horizon.
But they didn't have... What did they have besides New Super Mario Brothers? Mm-hmm. What did they have AAA to talk about at E3?
In 2009?
In 2009.
Metroid Galaxy.
In 2009, they had too many games. They had more games than they could actually get out by the end of the year.
I don't think they believe that Metroid Other M is a top-tier title.
But it depends what audience you're talking to, isn't it? For the audience they're talking to, the games press there, it is. Is it going to be one of their best-selling titles? Well, no, because it's going to sell a lot less than Wii Fit Plus did or whatever.
You don't feel like they still felt that they had to do some sort of mindshare face-saving at E3 2009? Because E3 2008, they got slammed.
But they did that with the Other M stuff and all that. But for a start, Zelda wasn't even in the actual presentation.
No, it wasn't.
The idea that this was just a PR balloon that they sent up to keep everyone from killing themselves. I don't think so.
Well, then, I mean, they obviously didn't have much to say about it, or they would have said...
No, they didn't, but I think that doesn't preclude it being as close as the holiday this year, right? Because the fact is, the old the old MOs have changed. They've controlled information in different ways. And the fact is, if you're talking timelines, it's 4 years after Twilight Princess, like Twilight Princess was 4 years after Wind Waker. It's not so different.
See, that's not how I think of the timelines, though. I think of the timelines based on how they act, not on when things are due for release.
The question is, assuming then that Zelda doesn't come out, what are you predicting is going to take its place?
You can't predict anything. There's nothing else.
No, I can predict because I don't see Galaxy coming out this summer.
So you're saying that Galaxy gets shifted all the way back to Mario Christmas?
I do, because I think their first quarter game is going to be something we don't know what fuck it is.
Well, their first quarter game is Endless Ocean.
Of first quarter game. So at the start of Q2.
Yeah.
It's going to be something we don't know with some thing, like some god-awful expanded audience thing they're going to push out. And then sometime mid-year, we get Other M.
So you're with me on that.
Yeah. And we get something else with it that gets announced at E3 that's relatively minor. And then end of year, we get Mario, we get whatever their big E3 announcement was. And we get told, Zelda is coming. Don't worry, it's coming.
Oh, yeah, it's foregone conclusion. You'll see it this year.
So let's move on from the schedule stuff here. We haven't talked about DS yet. And the day that we recorded this, there was a big story that Iwata kind of talked about what he wants in the new DS. I should be clear. He said it is not coming out in 2010 because there's just too much sales momentum for the DS.
I thought what he said was that after it set its records in North America,
there's no release
December,
date.
This is not the time to talk about a release date, is right. What he said.
Yes, which our super awesome Japanese translator, Matt Walker, put a note in there that what the contextual meaning of that is. The non-literal translation means it's not something that we should be talking about right now.
It's like it's not appropriate right now.
Yes.
Which is sort of very candid, really. It's like, we've got these great sales going again with the DS in North America, so you don't want to blunt that momentum with, sort of talking about what might replace it.
Right.
Which is absolutely true. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the product won't just drop out of the sky.
No, I think they'll be smarter than that with the handheld launch.
I don't see it in North America.
Now, if it were an iterative DS, like if it still had the DS moniker, that shit could just rain from the sky one day.
Well, yeah, because they've been doing that.
I mean, you could literally walk into like a Target and then there's this DS thing and I go home and go like, guys, do we know what that thing was? It was just sitting there on the shelf. I bought it and I'm scared.
We're talking about the real DS here. I mean, Iwata said it needs to have basically higher resolution screens, which would mean a stronger graphics processor,
right.
Which would mean a new tier of game. I'm sure it'll be backwards compatible with DS, but it will be a new tier of games that only run on this thing. Not like how they failed with DSi to establish that.
Yeah,
like,
it will not be an ARM9 based console.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
But I think the DS successor will be announced in Japan by the end of the year. Probably after the big Christmas sales period for the US, because they don't, I mean, the average person going to buy a DS 6 years after it was first released, they're not going to know it was announced in Japan anyway, but they don't want to mess with that. But as soon as that's over, bam, they get it out there.
I think there's a couple things here. I mean, first of all, I think they will, to some extent, play it by ear. I think we've seen already that they've talked about at E3s and stuff like we've had, or GDCs or whatever it was, they've had, handhelds kind of ready to go, and then they've looked at the market conditions and said no.
Not yet.
Bother with that. So I think they're going to take the temperature of the market. So it's up in the air, and the market conditions are very different in Japan than they are in America. There's always been this kind of lag between the two. The DS kind of exploded sooner in Japan, and maybe kind of hit the rocks a little sooner, and then they've done the DSi and the DSi XL or LL to boost things and all that. So two different separate markets. So I definitely think there's a strong likelihood that they'll do something in Japan that they won't necessarily be doing in America for a little while.
Right.
But the market conditions may dictate how much of a leap over the current DS it is, really. What I mean? Like, but my feeling is that it will be something that is initially meant to pick up the kind of the loyalist Nintendo players. I really think so. And I think what you could see, when they announce it, is that it will launch, or soon after will launch, with a virtual console handheld service.
Oh.
I think they've been holding, it seems like they've basically said they could do it for the DSi, nothing's stopping them. Now
but
they see,
no.
But there's no movement on it. I think what they're going to do is they're going to make it a selling point for that new version. So that, you know, the established Nintendo fans will say, this time, right out of the gate, there's a reason for me to buy this, that there wasn't there with the DSi.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I was thinking, was that they will definitely expand some, like, the online component will definitely be expanded with this new handheld.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's going to be another dual screen, something along those lines, and so where else can you go with it? Well, you expand the online component of the console.
Well, and they've talked about motion sensing as well, obviously,
yeah.
In this interview with the Japanese press. But that's what I think, because, and also exclusive card software or whatever as well, that will, you know, right out of the gate, establish this as a new platform that you need to get your hands on, in a way that with the DSi, I think they just passed and said, we're not going to do that yet, but they are, that is still going to happen. And it's going to happen with the next version, which will be more progressive, and that may well be announced at the end of the year in Japan.
Well, do you think that if the DSi hadn't not sold, there would be a virtual console on the DSi?
No, I think the DSi has done fine for them. I think that it's the approach they chose to take, that they wanted to release it more as just as a minor upgrade with a few new features to get people to kind of, you know, that might have been on the fence, to tip over the edge, you know, to receive a bit of added value, get some of the, you know, the people that like to get the new version of everything to get on top of it, and just, you know, give the DS ship a little buoyancy,
and
especially
also
in the Japanese
knock out the kinks
market.
Of their downloadable content.
Yeah, a test in the waters a little bit without dipping their toes too far in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you'll really see them as far as they are willing to go.
But is it really that much different than doing downloadable content on Wii?
When you sit down with a Wii, you know it can go online. With a DSi, it depends on where you are. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of the talk about the DS successor, which is already out there, has been framed by Iwata in terms of it needs to be online all the time.
Yes,
and that would be a very significant upgrade over what the current system can do, even the DSi. And the DSi has supposedly a stronger antenna built in or something, but, you know, it basically accesses the internet in exactly the same way. It's very cumbersome.
Yeah.
Set up your Nintendo Wi-Fi connection shit. And, you know, what I think what they're going for is a Kindle. They want the Kindle. They
or
want the built-in
an iPhone.
Prepaid.
Again, though, he
3G
has Walter has expressed the sentiment that, you know, tying it to a kind of a pay service like that kind of thing is not something that, in that very same interview with the Japanese press, he expressed that's not something that he said it doesn't go well with gaming.
Yeah.
Well, no, but the Kindle doesn't tie to a subscription service.
Right.
You pay for it in the price of the unit.
Yeah, correct. You pay for it in the price of the unit, but it's you are still kind of transferring that cost.
Yeah,
What he's talked about is extending these partnerships in Japan to basically get more hotspots and all this sort of stuff. Now, here again, you see a difference between Japan and
right.
America, because in Japan, with the densely populated areas, it's feasible that if they can get more partnerships and all that, they can get, you know, pretty good coverage through that kind of model. In America, or Europe, but certainly in America, that's not nearly so viable. So I'd be interested to see how they can square that circle between the regions.
I mean, I think they could easily point to the sales of the DS and DS Lite, DSi, and just say, yeah, hey, Verizon, we've kind of sold a lot of our product in the past. What do you think? You maybe cut us a deal?
Right.
Even more so than Amazon did with the Kindle. I mean, Amazon got that deal, and the Kindle was just like, that was a completely unproven product.
Yeah, but the question is, how much are they going to be able to pull for Verizon in terms of money? Because how much are they going to be able to say, look, we'll give you this much per unit?
Uh-huh.
Because you have to factor that into the cost of the unit.
Sure, but I think Nintendo, knowing the number of units that they're going to sell, they have a lot of bargaining power in terms of getting a good rate per unit.
I think the problem is, if they see it as not being necessary in Japan, that therefore informs how they design the hardware.
Yeah.
There's very limited amount of what you can then do to make that leap in America.
Yeah, but they're going to look at this with a worldview.
Yeah.
I mean, they should do, certainly.
Yeah.
They're not stupid.
Well, I don't think they're going to do online what's the way of putting it? Online only purchases for games, obviously. There's
too many
problems with that, and the PSP Go model is stupid.
I mean, it's not going to happen. They're having too, it's too successful with box products. The kind of audience they're going for, it's not. That's
well,
not something
you,
that they
and you cut
in.
Off your nose to spite your face there, because you run into problems where you don't get the impulse buys, the same kind of impulse buys of family members who go to the store to buy a game for their kid, and they come home with DuckTales DS. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I wish.
You wind up with the inability to make gifts out of game purchases.
Right.
And I think with Nintendo's core market, which is younger, the core titles will not be sold online.
And also for digital distribution, you almost have to have a credit card.
Yes.
And you know, the DS audience doesn't have a credit card. So, or they're not supposed to.
I'm not supposed to.
That whatever the successor to the DS is, you will buy some physical shit to put in it to play a game.
They're
going to have a lot of games available online that'll be separate. It'll be your DSiWare or whatever they want to call it.
They won't be clocks. I mean,
maybe
at least the DS is portable. So, yeah, I mean, you'd like the hotspot coverage to be really comprehensive and convenient, but yeah, you can take it with you. Taking your Wii with you is also possible, but not nearly so convenient.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, who wants to throw out a crazy prediction?
Oh, I don't know if it's crazy, but I think provided the schedule that we've got is right, there's not a chance in hell that we're going to get Retro Studios' new game this year, actually, because...
Maybe it could be one of those surprise games we talked about.
It could be a surprise game, but I almost feel it might be a bit of a disservice to them if it is.
Well, it depends on what the game is.
I feel like it will be probably more in the early 2011 category, but we'll hear about it this year.
Maybe they're making Zelda. Well, we better, or everyone there is dead. I mean,
given if they've got the kind of strong lineup that we're positing with Zelda, you know, at the culmination of the year, they don't need the game this year, but they need to show something this year to kind of, you know, keep people, you know, keep the mindshare, keep people sort of excited about what their next thing is, because I think, you know, it may well be something a bit more original than we've had in the past. You know, I don't necessarily think it's going to be another Nintendo IP that they're kind of resurrecting or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it's also going to fill a genre niche that Nintendo hasn't really done themselves, as Metroid Prime kind of did. So, but I'm not thinking an out-and-out first-person shooter. I'm thinking open-world game.
Ooh, that could be cool. Or maybe some kind of RPG.
Nah, I don't think so.
If Nintendo has an RPG coming, it's either being made by a third party or they finally put Monolith back to
work. They've got Monardo, Beginning of the World, already showed, so that's what Monolith are doing.
For what it's worth, Retro Studios is based in Austin, Texas, and Austin is a conclave of MMO developers. They could very well cherry-pick talented people from studios all around them to put together some kind of RPG team. I'm not saying it would be an MMO, but it might be something tangential to an MMO.
Some kind of skills.
You know, American style RPG, like a Dragon Age. Not really like a Dragon Age, but you know what I mean.
Like a Fallout type of thing, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
So a BioWare styled game.
Yeah, I think that is possible. It's more likely than an MMO.
Given the architecture of the Wii.
Yeah, given the architecture of the Wii. I mean, I have to think that they're creating a first-person shooter with an updated version of the Metroid Prime 3 engine.
I don't know. I kind of think if it was that, we would have heard about it already.
I don't know.
I'm inclined to agree. I think that's the kind of massive game that's filling a niche that everybody in the world has identified that they would want to say, hey, there is something coming there.
We haven't heard anything from Retro aside from Metroid Prime Trilogy forever.
It's more than just the developer niche, though. It's that this is a whole genre that's been underserved, that they would say, hey, there is stuff in this genre we've got.
So on that note, one of my predictions that I wrote down here is that I'm expecting a major exclusive first-person shooter for Wii this year. I don't know if it'll be from Nintendo or Retro Studios. It could even be a third party, you know, kind of like the weird Treyarch thing I threw out there last week. It could be something from EA. I don't know what corner it's going to come from, but I think this is the year that we get like the real conduit Like the game that does what the Conduit tried to do. I really do. I really do. I think it's coming. I think some developer out there is like, you know what? There's a space to create a special kind of first-person shooter on this system that we can't do on the other systems. And nobody's done it yet. People have talked about it, but nobody's really done it, and we're going to do it. And it could very well be Retro's game. But if not, I think we're going to have at least one kind of big exclusive game.
All right, here's one for you, Johnny. I predict that Valve will have a version of Team Fortress out for the Wii by the end of the year. How you like that?
Whoa!
How you like that?
Whoa!
And that's not too crazy either. Just because
That is an online ass online game.
True, yeah. But I'm just saying it wouldn't have to be. I'm not saying a port or a clone of what they're trying to do, but I'm just saying.
So does that mean it would use the stupid Wii speak? because
you
taunting people is the best part of that game. Although generally speaking, when I was playing that game, I was using like soundboards to taunt people.
Only soundboard, eh? Who is your daddy and what does he do?
No. It'd just be like really awful music that just plays endlessly. No.
I mean, James brings up a good point. Team Fortress absolutely requires communication.
As it stands right now on the PC, correct.
Yeah. So you're saying some kind of like weird console-ized
Just version. Something more like Time Splitters along that line. Something like that. But with a better online with an online component, like a better online component, like the Conduit, except well done.
I think what Johnny's talking about, certainly if Retro is doing it, I think it'd be more single player focused. I think it'd be playing to the Wii's strengths or not playing to its weaknesses. Is probably more accurate way to put it, because as people said, like Modern Warfare, I mean the single player is pretty short. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. so it's a lot of it is a multiplayer experience for the long haul. So perhaps a more kind of extensive single player experience, and just a different kind of game design. I think that's what you'd see for an exclusive big FPS. But where would you put Red Steel 2 in that category? But does it count or not?
As a first person shooter, no. That's a sword game. Sorry.
Yeah.
If we're talking Valve stuff. I don't think Valve's doing anything for Wii, but if they were, to me, Portal is a much better fit.
Yeah, obviously Portal is the better option.
And I think actually the problem is a technical one, because it takes a lot of processing power to show you what's on the other side of that portal and make it real time. And they dealt with that. I mean, if you read the developer, if you listen to the developer diaries in Portal, they really struggle with getting that just right. And I think it's difficult to do that on Wii because of the lack of processing power. But if they can clear that, I think Portal makes a lot more sense on Wii.
I would not disagree.
All right. So I think it's time for me to pull out some crazy-ass shit now.
Yeah!
All right. So I'm going to run through Nintendo's development groups we haven't talked about, or briefly. I had forgotten about Monado. That's going to rear up at E3 again. Because if you look at the video,
probably on the down low.
If you look at the that's Japan this year, not US this year. But if you
I
look
think
at
it's going to be in Japan by the time E3 happens.
I see, because if you look at the trailer, that trailer is really far along.
Yeah,
I mean that game looks like it's like maybe halfway plus there.
Yeah, they've had plenty of time probably to be working on it because they weren't probably working on Disaster.
No, they didn't put their A game into Disaster Day of Crisis.
No.
I think Project Sora is going to announce something at E3.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to remember that.
So the question is, what are they making that, quote, Nintendo could not make on their own?
Yeah, I mean...
A PlayStation 3 game.
Yeah, here's why I'm almost certain 2010 is reasonable. Because if you look at the only thing Project Sora's website has, which is their office tour, they have a shit ton of computers in their development area. They have a ton of workstations.
Isn't Project Sora just one guy, though?
Well, he founded it. But
yeah, co-founded it with Nintendo.
I thought it was kind of a phantom company, though.
I think that's more Sora Limited. Sora is a
Project
different...
Sora is a co-op between Nintendo and Sora Limited.
Yeah, he founded it and Nintendo bought it and they invested.
Yeah,
so he's hiring people into this then.
Yeah, so Project Sora the company is 72% owned by Nintendo and the rest.
Well,
we should
make clear who we're talking about. It's Masahiro Sakurai. I don't think we've actually said who he is.
in January, I think it was January of last year, that his website updated with pictures of his empty office that's clearly been used because all the video game consoles have been set up like they've been played recently.
Well, I mean, well, my question is, have you got a prediction about what
this is where I'm going with it. What could Nintendo not make themselves?
A third-party game, like a Metal Gear Solid kind of a, like a Twin Snakes kind of a project.
See, I think that's got to be close to what it is. It's got to be something that it's a franchise that another company owns that Nintendo is making a game with.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it goes something kind of like a, not saying this, but goes kind of like in a Kingdom Hearts direction, where it's a Nintendo-made game that uses characters from another company's franchises.
Okay.
And Sakurai has experience making game with franchise characters.
Mashup games kind of thing, yeah.
So I could very well see that being what they're doing.
What if it's something like a Mario and Sonic platforming game?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it could be anything like that.
Actually, I hope not, because it's Sakurai.
That would be an awful...
Because that would be terrible.
I'm not a fan of these school-level designs.
But it's the same kind of idea. I mean, I think it's something where Nintendo isn't the primary owner of the franchise, but... Yeah. The franchise owner can't make the game.
But, I mean, there's different ways of looking at it. For instance, I mean, some of the same kinds of things were kind of said about Metroid Other M in terms of, you know, R&D work. You know, this is not a game that we could make in terms of, you know, the visuals and all that, but it's a Metroid game. It's apparently going to be closer to the old school Metroid games than it was before, but in terms of, you know, what they do with Team Ninja, it's something that they couldn't have made on their own. So it doesn't have to be on the IP side.
But what's very interesting is they put in an extraordinarily expensive video conferencing system that I know exactly how much it costs because of my job, and it is an order of magnitude of $70,000. Mm-hmm. That they explicitly referenced Nintendo of America as being able to contact with for, quote, important secrets. So I think they have something that, of course, it's Sakurai, so his blogs always kind of tease you. But I think they do have something that's fairly far along because it's, quote, an important secret in January of 2009.
But I suppose, I mean, there's the outstanding question of whether Pikmin's actually going to rear its head or not.
That's dead.
They've given vague assertions about that in the past. I'm not sure. It could pop up as one of these complimentary titles somewhere along the way.
At this point, I think Pikmin's on WiiWare or DS.
See, I think a DS Pikmin would be... fine.
I think they should have done it 5 years ago.
For the new DS? Like higher resolution screens?
Well,
more
see, we don't
power?
Know how the new DS is going to control, though, because of that nebulous...
Well, no, I think it's more viable on a newer...
Yeah, obviously.
Because it's just, you know, the current DS... I struggle to see how you could have something that would... I mean, you know, developer ingenuity is a wonderful thing, so who knows? But
yeah.
I struggle to see how you could have something that captures the essence of Pikmin with what the DS could do.
Well, I don't know. If it's 2D.
Yeah, I mean, precisely. Like I say, you could have some ingenious reworking where you know, totally change the kind of the style in a way, but it retains some essential quality. I mean, it would perhaps...
But you're not going to have 200 Pikmin on the screen.
No, but you could have 50.
But I'm kind of a little... I'm unsure about what they're going to do with Pikmin.
Right. I'm with you. I'm actually kind of skeptical on the status of that game.
I honestly don't think that game still exists. I think it's just dead.
No, I wouldn't say that. They could be quiet on something for a while and come back with it, but whether it will be this year, it's the kind of thing that could be an interesting way to launch the new handheld, because it's like, this is something we could do that we couldn't do before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of thing that gets people like us to say, yeah, that's worth buying.
Well, I have a new prediction for you. I don't know how much discussion there'll be here. I don't know how interested anyone is, but I think we'll see a new Wii exclusive Castlevania game from EGA.
So this is like in parallel to the one on 360 that has nothing to do with EGA.
Right. He's been totally stripped of any kind of
responsibility. They basically told him, you don't get to work on this. Go.
Yeah, I mean, his track record with 3D Castlevania is bad, bad, bad.
It's terrible. So,
see,
terrible.
I thought Judgment was fantastic. I don't understand.
Yeah, but let's be clear. This man is Castlevania. Like, he doesn't even know how to make anything else. Like, if he's not making Castlevania, I don't know what he's doing. He's hanging out with Ken Kutaragi or something in the corner office. Like, he's not doing anything if he's not doing Castlevania. And the only system where it makes sense for him to do Castlevania this year, because DS ain't happening. That run is over.
Nah,
that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah.
I'm expecting some kind of Castlevania from EGA, almost certainly a side-scrolling Castlevania for Wii. It could possibly be like one of these Mega Man 10 kind of things where they release it on download platforms across all three systems.
Retro-styled or 3D?
I honestly, more likely than that, I don't think it'll be download. I think it will be a disc game for Wii, like 2.5D.
More in the vein of, you know, we're buying his blob and some of the stuff that we've got, or Muramasa or something like that. I agree that this is the kind of thing that, you know, he could... I guess the question would be, you know, as you said, the logic is, if Igarass is working on the Castlevania, which he probably is, then, you know, where's it going to be? And, I mean, it's difficult to see where it could be.
Yeah,
other than Wii, or maybe the HD downloadable scene, I suppose.
Right, yeah, maybe.
You know, it's something distinct from Castlevania Rebirth, you know, which we have already, which he was involved with, but, you know, the M2 are really the people that, you know, do that.
Yeah.
What if I said that we could end up with... What's the company that makes all of Skip, the art styles... and the all their bit generation stuff. What if I said that they had a collection game coming out that kind of expands on one or maybe multiple games like this for either the DS or the Wii?
That would be hot.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see if they've got anything else in the retail space. I mean, obviously, that, you know, I mean, you know, no one saw Captain Rainbow coming, and then it came and went in Japan and was never going to go anywhere else, unfortunately, but... They mentioned having a Motion Plus game cancelled, you know, that they got so far with a game that used Motion Plus and cancelled it, which could have been downloadable, just like their other games.
I think it's going to be a cold day in hell when we see a downloadable Motion Plus game.
I don't see why not, though. I mean, I just feel like
that is two super niche subsets of the Wii.
You're just multiplying a fraction times a fraction and getting a smaller fraction.
But, I mean, it doesn't have to be exclusive either, you know. It just surprises me that, you know, the people haven't made use of these more, to be honest, because some people would probably think, oh, well, that's a novelty. You're sort of like the effect of putting the thing on the box for Avatar, but just, you know, in the...
That wasn't a novelty, though.
But hopefully with more substance behind it. <yeah. laughs>
They're working on a Chibi-Robo game, right? A DS one? Another one?
It's already out in Japan. Okay. It's been out for quite a while, yeah.
I don't know if that's getting ported. Yeah, because that came out in July.
I wouldn't expect to see that outside Japan.
No.
Well, the new Play Control didn't make it either, so...
Skip seems like a company that has complete creative freedom to do whatever they want.
I think they've found their kind of milieu with the art style stuff and DSiWare.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised to see an expanded version of some of these games on a retail release.
That would be cool. I don't know that that's actually going to happen. I don't know that makes sense except in a compilation.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Not in one game.
Skip Arcade,
like,
Treasures?
Yeah, like a game just called Art Style.
That's interesting. Yeah, it could happen.
I think the next obvious one that is due for a revival is... I predicted this last year. I might have predicted it the year before. But this time I am fucking dead set that there will be another Mario Party game this year. It's just
It's getting more bold to predict that every year that passes without
they
one.
They can sell a lot of Motion Plus for that game.
Exactly. That is what I'm seeing as their Motion Plus.
How about
vehicle.
A new WarioWare for Motion Plus?
Well, we've got DIY coming out on DS, but yeah, it's quite surprising that we haven't seen another one on Wii of some balance board, whatever it would be.
I could see them saying, here is the new Mario Party. It supports the balance board, and you're going to need to get 4 freaking Wii Motion Plus. Go get them.
Yep. Yeah. Pony up.
I think it's called WarioWare : Kitchen Sink.
Yeah, just everything. Just everything
it,
is in
it
that
uses the vitality sensor. Basically, while you play this game, you look like the robot woman from the end of Superman 3.
Yeah.
Nice. No.
You look like a one-man band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dick Van Dyke. Yeah, exactly.
There's a couple of cool questions we should answer. First of all, vitality sense. What are they going to do with it?
I predict that there will be a sex aid based on that peripheral by the end of the year.
But it'll be highly unofficial.
Also starring Jenny McCarthy and making use of the camera.
It'll be made by Color Dreams.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
I think we'll see one game totally based around around it, right? You know, which will be something to do with, you know, controlling your state of mind or whatever. So you
something
don't
really
to...
stupid, basically.
And then you'll probably see it some sort of trivial inclusion in like more traditional games. They'll have some weird little.
Yeah, I always assumed that that the next Wii Fit or Wii Fit style game will use it heavily.
Yeah,
because you can use it to say, "Hey, look, you know, you've got your heart rate at whatever."
Right, that makes sense.
I'm sure you'll see some sort of stealth game too to use it.
Oh,
they'll
God.
Monitor your heartbeat or something.
Oh, I think, you know, Jesus. You could have something like the start of Silent Hill: Shattered Memories, but with a lie detector thing sort of built into it with the vitality sensor.
Oh, yeah.
So when it asks you the profiling questions and it knows you're lying, it can adapt to that. That
feature, right.
Pretty cool.
The other thing, of course, that Ryan mentions in the question that we really should address is Wii HD. Is it going to happen? Is it going to get announced this year? Is it going to get launched this year?
No.
Let me throw this out. It will get announced in Japan again after Christmas.
You think there's going to be an HD version of the Wii and not a new system?
It's the same thing. Same difference.
So you're just saying basically, yeah, well, let's define what it's going to be first off.
It's not going to play Mario Galaxy in 1080p. It's only going to play new games in high definition.
Will these games be forward compatible is the question.
Will they play on your old Wii? No, they will not. No, they will not play on your old Wii. Let me throw out, this is a bold prediction here, but I think HD stands not for high definition, but for hard drive. And maybe it's a foregone conclusion that this thing would have a hard drive in it, but I think when Nintendo announces this and presents it to the general public, they're going to focus more on the hard drive element of it than they will the high definition graphics, because they believe that people are overwhelmed by HD, or, you know, it's a buzzword but it doesn't really mean anything to people. I mean, I think it'll probably have a Blu-ray drive or whatever, but I think HD will be kind of a double entendre here, and they will use it to also stand for the fact that it has a hard drive, and they'll make this a big selling point for it. You know, now you can really use all your WiiWare and your Virtual Console stuff, and, you know, we're going to expand this stuff, we're going to increase the size of the kinds of games, we're going to have maybe games on demand, so you can download like full, maybe older, maybe it'll just be player's choice stuff from Wii, you know, kind of the older stuff. But you'll be able to download Twilight Princess on your Wii and play that, and you won't even have to go to the store. You'll be able to download music and movies and stuff, because there's a lot of money to be made in that stuff.
And they've already started doing that in Japan as well.
Yeah, they've made some forays into it, but obviously, yeah, the lack of storage is always a big problem.
And one final component of this is that Nintendo, if you go back to the 64DD, long time ago, but at the time, the big selling point of the 64DD was that, one, it held a lot more space and was cheaper than cartridge, but two, it was rewritable. It had a lot of space, like almost the entire space on that disc was rewritable. And at the time Nintendo marketed this, or they announced it back at Space World, as allowing them to create new kinds of games that can never be done before, because it allows so much user-generated content, or maybe so much procedural content that is stored over time, that it allows them to create and develop new kinds of games that could never be done before. And to this day, because they still don't really have a highly rewritable format, they never really have taken advantage of all those promises. So I think the idea of having a lot of onboard rewritable space is something that's been floating around Nintendo for a long time. And I think maybe some of those old ideas will be revived for this, and that it'll be marketed as not just, you know, here's your bigger hard drive, whatever, but it'll actually, this will be integral to them selling this as a new system that does new kinds of games that your old Wii can't do.
Yeah, I think it'd be more about that and not about technical supremacy, because that's not their game. And I think what you'll see is it is, you know, it's already happened with the Wii itself. It's more of a handheld type model that they're going with now, in terms of, you know, the Nintendo's handheld from the beginning were technically behind the curve, but it's all, well, no one cares because it's handhelds. Right. And obviously they've made that sidestep now with the consoles as well. So I think you could get something that's more iterative.
Well, I mean, the Wii was already iterative.
Yeah, well, exactly. The Wii was already iterative, and I think, but the point is, the next Wii could be equally as iterative and not necessarily jump all the way to the HD console level of performance, as much as that might vex some people.
Well, I mean, it may very well just be more friendly towards HDTVs, Nothing more, nothing less.
In terms of uprezzing, maybe old games.
Yeah, exactly.
Possibly. And then in terms of the actual difference in the games, it could be more what Johnny's talking about in terms of using the storage and you know, maybe doing something different with the controller.
Yeah.
But not so much like, oh, now we're going to, you know, make everything, you know, specifically designed for 720p upwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I do think that they're going to, their next one will be not as powerful as, say, a 360, but it will certainly be relatively close to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I mean, they've said themselves that, well, it'll be cheaper to make it next time.
But you're also talking about now, I think, similar sorts of things we talked about with the DS, in terms of they're going to take the temperature of the market, obviously, the price cut, new Super Mario Brothers, economic recovery, 3 million Wiis in the US in December. So
exactly.
I think it's definitely, at the least, it's going to be what Johnny says, which is in Japan after Christmas, you know, don't interfere with that. Dude, although even this past calendar year, 2009, overall, despite everything in terms of how many it already sold, when the price cuts were, it still outsold the PS3. Mm-hmm. Its lead got bigger. It just got bigger at a slower rate than it did
in Japan.
Yeah, it's still a juggernaut.
Yeah.
So one of the funny things about trying to measure hardware cycles here or try to figure out when the next generation starts, you have to realize that the situation is completely different for Nintendo than it is for Sony and Microsoft. Sony and Microsoft want a 10-year hardware cycle because they sell the things at a loss for the first half of that cycle.
Right, they have to do it.
What Sony and Microsoft dream about is saturating the market and getting to the point where they don't have anyone left to sell their systems to, because at that point they stop losing money on the hardware.
Yeah. Please, okay? Stop buying them.
Because they're making the entirety of their money on accessory sales and software licensing fees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
Nintendo is making the majority of their money on selling hardware. So Nintendo wants the hardware cycle to be as short as possible. That's why they iterate every 2 to 3 years with handhelds, because they make so much money. They don't care that much if you buy a lot of software. I mean, they make some money from it, but they make even more money selling you a bunch of systems. And as soon as those sales slow down, they're gonna make another system.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen on the DS. They're quite content for people to keep buying Mario Kart DS and New Super Mario Bros., you know, as well, because they're buying the system, and that's really where the gravy is. And when they need to move the needle, you have the DSi, which is basically, you know, a bit of a con trick, really. You sort of rearrange everything, you make it look like there's more value, when in fact they're probably actually improving their margins.
It's less, yes.
You know, so that's what they do. They just shuffle it around and reconfigure things, and then slice more off the top. And I think that's more where we could see them going with the consoles. Absolutely.
Yes, I think Wii HD will probably come out at $250 to $300. I mean, it'll be mass market, but it'll be more expensive than the Wii is now. And the Wii itself may stay at the same price it is now for a long time.
Yeah, look, we've seen DS Lite and DSi coexist to some extent.
Yeah.
And
I
think, I mean, the fact that the Wii finally did come down from $250, mm-hmm. and, you know, the relevant price points in the other regions, is the first hurdle being passed for the Wii HD. I don't think he was ever going to get a Wii HD type product as long as Wii was still at $250. But now that it's come down, I think you started to open it up again, because I don't think they want to sell a really premium product.
I mean, no. I think also Nintendo looked at the success of the 360 in the Western markets, where they had a lot of success with a very cheap arcade unit, but then, you know, kind of like a tiered models, where you had the Elite and then you had, you know, the lower, the Pro, and, you know, Microsoft has since scaled those down. But I think Nintendo looked at the 360 and said, you know, that may just work.
People who bought something in 2006 as well, rather than the people who bought something in 2009 when the price cut happened or whatever, are much more willing to spend again, because that last expenditure was. But if you give them a reason to spend again, they will.
Nintendo is running out of people to sell Wiis to.
Absolutely.
There's so many. Yeah. I mean, and all the people left who don't already have a Wii are people on the lower end who are waiting for it to get even cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, at which point Nintendo makes less and less and less money off of those people. Plus, it'll be later in the cycle, so those people are probably going to end up buying fewer games. So it ends up being that those people are, that's residual money for Nintendo, but where they're going to make the most money is selling it to the on the front end. And so what they're doing with Wii HD or whatever they call the new system is they're selling this to people who've already bought a Wii. It's not maybe what you'd think of as early adopters. You know, it's going to be a very mass market, blue ocean kind of a crowd that they're going to try to sell this thing to, and that's going to lead into the kind of features that they promote and that they include. But there's no doubt that Nintendo's starting to think about how can we sell more hardware to the people who already bought some. Well, we really got to go. So thanks to Ryan again for the great letter. Jumped us off on a hell of a discussion there with our 2010 predictions, and I hope that we'll be around a year from now to kind of review these and laugh at ourselves.
Halfway there, aren't we?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Come back next week. We'll have a lot more listener mail and who knows what else. So for that, this has been Radio Free Nintendo signing off. Goodbye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't really know what else there is for me to do or what more I can get out of it. You know, like, I just kind of wanted to see it for myself. And now that I have, it's like...
Yoshi!
No, it's not.
Like, you know, like, part Stop. Of you doesn't want to see it, but part of you does just to say that you did or just to see what the fuss is about. And actually, to be for the record, I haven't even seen
Yoshi!
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, if... I should probably make the disclaimer that if you're listening to this and you don't know what that is, don't search for it.
In fact, do not. We should probably put that disclaimer before you mention it, so someone doesn't go, what's that?
But, I mean, you know, Nobi Nobi Boy is not profane or sexually explicit or gross. There you go. I just don't know what else to say about
that
it.
That was...
Tortured.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Like, I like it. I don't know how to talk about it.
I don't think there's anything we can compare this to. I think we can just say, Nobi Nobi Boy, what the hell?
Boomers. Well, the good thing is if they ever decide to close down the arcade, they could just turn into a strip club. So that's the perfect name for it.
Chris Berman's face on the front of it.
This strip club is Chris Berman approved. Gone!
Oh, no.
When we come back, we have at least one bit of listener mail that could go all the way, and we'll see if we have time for anything else after that.
So, eat my bullets!
Just setting up.
Eat my bullets!
I'm just setting them up.
Jesus
setting them up.
Christ.
We, all right, we'll be back in a minute. Cammy is going to tell someone that the new system is 1.1 to 1.3 times as powerful as Wii.
I think the next console is going to be called the Nintendo Smile, to which my first question will be,
S-M-I-I-E.
Is there a vertical stand for that, Cammy? Is there?
Nintendo Smile, S-M-I-L-I.
Yes. Smeal.
All right. Well, we really gotta go.